Welcome to the Game History Podcast, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talent in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine Adamick is here with her weekly recommendation. My guest today is Barbara Winkes, but before that, as always, we're going to talk to Justine and find out her book recommendation this week. Hi, Justine.
Hi, Brad. How are you this week?
It's a crazy busy week for me, but that's okay. I'm trying to get my book out, but I'll survive.
I'm looking forward to it. It's next week.
Yes, it is. Actually, okay. Yes, it's next week.
Yes, it's next week. Sneaking up on you, huh?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
What do you have for us today?
I'm recommending The Necessary Deaths, A Dellingpole Mystery, Book 1 by David C. Dawson. I picked this book up because it was on sale and it looked interesting. And as I was reading it, I was almost to the very end when something sparked a memory and I realized, oh, wait, David C. Dawson, you interviewed him on the show. And, oh, I remember this book is sitting in my to-be-read pile of review copies that I have. So it turns out it ended up being a good one and I had missed it. So if people want to send me review copies and they think that I've overlooked it, they should remind me once in a while. And if I don't recommend your book and it's in there, well, I may have missed it anyway.
And it's info at GameMysteryPodcast.com if you want to send a book in to Justine.
Yeah.
And David was a great interview.
He was. And I had a stack of books to read then and really hadn't paid much attention. And I'm glad that it popped up on sale and I'm glad it caught my attention. And I think people ought to take a look at this book.
So tell us about it.
It's set in England and Dominic Dellingpole is a solicitor. In England, they divide lawyers into barristers and solicitors are the ones that do transactions, not the ones who go to court. And he has a lover named Jonathan McFadden, who's living out in the country and working in the gardens. And it starts out as a cozy mystery. I really thought it was going to be a cozy mystery, that there was, a woman from her apartment building had fainted, she got word that her son had overdosed and he drives her out. Turns out that the son is in a hospital near where his lover is. So he drives her out there to spend time with his lover. And then it looks like there are some other people in the apartment building that are involved in the story. And I think, okay, we've got a set cast of characters. Then we've got some clues. It has a couple of scenes early on from the bad guys. So I'm thinking, hey, this is a cozy mystery. Well, that was really a mistaken impression.
He surprised you.
He surprised me because this very calm book with this very calm, centered main character spins out of control very quickly, where there's death of people early on that you don't think are going to die. So you're worried that every single person other than the main character is always on the chopping block. So that builds its own set of tension, and the mystery just gets more and more entangled. A little spy versus spy, and then all of a sudden it reaches up into various levels of government and private industry. And the next thing you know, he's in a ticklish situation, and hoping for rescue. And sometimes he, participates in his own escape. And it's got all the makings of a thriller mystery.
I was going to say, it sounds like mystery, thriller, and suspense all rolled into one.
And that's why I've got a Cracker Jack recommendation from me. Because Cracker Jack is a little sweet, a little salty, a little crunchy, and a few nuts thrown in. That's a Cracker Jack recommendation. And I've only given that out to one other book. And this is our second Cracker Jack recommendation.
Woohoo, another Cracker Jack.
Yeah. So it's got a good mixture of all of the things that you like in a mystery. You know, I always like a little supernatural, and that's certainly not involved in this. But, you know, it's got a little intrigue. It's got a little thrilling. It doesn't have a lot of sex, a little off the page sex, but it is overall a remarkably well done piece of work.
Glad to hear that, because David's a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to reading the sequel, which is already out. I think he's got a couple more on the drafting board. But, you know, before I get to the next set of books, I'm going to drop everything and read the second book in the series.
And do you have anything from Read Queer Tales this week?
Not this week, but next week is Lev Raphael's second book, The Edith Wharton Murders, coming out on Thursday when you're going to be interviewing Lev. So it's going to be a big week. And I think that's the day before another book comes out. What's coming out on the 10th, Brad?
I'm not sure what book comes out of the death. You're embarrassing me. I think it's called A Body on the Hill.
Oh, that's right. That's by the author who did that great book, Body in the Bathhouse.
Yes.
Really like that.
He's outstanding.
Outstanding. Mitch O'Reilly. Yeah. One of my favorite protagonists. So, yeah, people can settle in for a good weekend with both Lev's book and yours.
Well, thank you. And I'm literally blushing right now, but thank you.
So and, they should pre-order it now, and they can get it hot off the presses. Both of those books they should pre-order.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
We'll talk to you next week.
All right, Justine. If you enjoy Gay Mystery Podcast, let others know by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to our show. Barbara Winkus writes suspense and romance with lesbian characters at the center. She has always loved stories in which women persevere and lift each other up, expect high drama and happy endings. Barbara lives in Quebec, Canada with her wife. Welcome, Barbara.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being on the show. You know, before we begin, you live in Quebec, but that's not where you're originally from.
No, I'm from Germany originally. I moved here, that was in 2011.
What took you to Canada?
I met my wife 11 years ago in Paris. We knew each other online, but then we figured out that we both had planned a trip to Paris for the same year. And so we decided to meet, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Oh, my goodness. You met in Paris, and that's actually extremely romantic.
It is. What a nice story to tell.
Yeah, that is a very nice story to tell. You know, my daughter is going to be going to Germany this fall to get her master's degree. Don't ask me where or what university. I completely forget. But she's very excited.
Is it in the north or in the south? Do you have...
I don't remember. It's a new okay. Because it's a new university, and she was nervous about that, but she checked really heavily into it and decided it was a good school. So that's as far as I remember. I meant to call her this morning, but I'll call her later. Okay. But let's get down to business. Last month, you released Exit Strategy, which is the second Joanna Mitchell thriller. And when this show releases today, Thursday, June 4th, you have released the third novel in the series, Original Sin.
That's right.
Right? Now, the protagonist in your story is obviously Joanna Mitchell. Tell us about Joanna.
Joanna, she went to prison prior to the first book because she took matters into her own hands and killed a serial murderer. And the first book, it shows her life in the present and also in another case that she becomes aware of. Her current job, which is she works in a warehouse, and one of the truck drivers finds the victim of another murderer who seems somebody from Joanna's past. She's not sure, but she hears the story and she thinks of all the similarities, and she should be staying away, especially given her history, but of course she can't, and that's the premise of the first story. And that's Killer Instinct, the first one, and it goes from there.
So she sounds like she's kind of a kick-ass woman if she killed a serial killer.
She is, absolutely.
Can you tell us more about her personality?
She's very stubborn. She's like I said before. She's she should be staying away from the case, from the police, from everything in this case, but she can't. And the thing is, she still has some sort of friendship with the internal affairs inspector, and she meets her regularly, and they talk. They drink together, and they have this kind of not entirely dysfunctional, but a little bit strange relationship. And so this is why she always also gets more and more involved into the case, and which turns out to be something from her past also.
Interesting. Would you like to give us a taste of what Original Sin is about, the book that comes out today?
This is wrapping up other parts of her past a bit, because in the course of the series we learn a little bit about her background, about her family also, things that made her personality and made her who she is even before those experiences on the job and with the serial killer. And so we find out a little bit more about her mother in Original Sin. Her mother left when she was 10 years old, and this is where she finds out the reason and the whole background of this story. But of course, also there's still murder and chaos following her around.
She's a complicated character with a complicated life.
She is. Always interesting for me also to go a little bit deeper with the family history. And like we said, it's a relationship. It also matters to me, but a little bit of everything. It's like it's not just the person solving the case, but also how is the approach, and how does the personality and the history play into that approach.
Now, in the first novel, Joanne begins falling for another character named Rue. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
And then later novels, Rue becomes a bigger part of her life.
That is true, because it's all related to that first initial case. And so the two of them start a relationship. It's tough to really say a lot of about that without giving spoilers, but it's that relationship that is a little bit more the focus in the second, and some loose ends that I always felt were there a little bit, and also readers sometimes ask me about what their lives would be like after the ending of Killer Instinct. So then I realized there was a bit more to the story.
Yeah, it's interesting when you're writing thrillers and mysteries and such that you can only tell so much. You want to tell what the story's about, but you can only tell so much because you don't want to give too much away.
It's true. That's always a little bit difficult to sum it up.
Now, in addition to the Joanna Mitchell thrillers, you've also written 10 novels in the Carpenter Harding series, as well as two other series that I'm aware of. Is that correct?
That is correct. One of them is a series of shorter stories. That is the Jace and Emma books. They are more romantic suspense. And the fourth one, that is a series that is more in the area of romance, women's fiction type series. So that is definitely more the romance, even though it has also a little bit of suspense in it. But it was really mostly Carpenter Harding where I started to go into that direction and developed a long series that I wanted to do for a long time, because it's the type of series I also always like to read.
Well, in addition to those series, you've written quite a few standalone novels as well.
That is true. And there are sometimes I did experiments and went into other genres like dystopian. But in the past few years, I really put the focus on the mystery and thrillers.
Now, why mysteries and thrillers?
It was always my favorite genre. I can go back all the way to reading children's mysteries or young adult mysteries, and as an adult, I always like to read books with the women characters as protagonists. But I had a lot of mainstream thrillers that I read, because at the time it wasn't until my mid-20s that I really discovered also lesbian fiction and lesbian mysteries. And so once I had all that in place as a reader, I also had a vision of what I wanted to do with my own characters, where I wanted to go with them. But from there, it still took me a while to really get serious about publishing. And that came more into place when I came to Canada, and I, of course, quit my jobs in Germany, and I couldn't really work here right away, because there was, of course, a lot of paperwork to fill first, and that gave me the time to get my publishing schedule and into gear and get really serious about it.
Now, Germany may be different than here in the States, but I would imagine when you were younger, there weren't a lot of mysteries with female protagonists.
I remember what I'm still reading, for example, it's you mean when I was like a child?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I had a series that I remember that was about a girl named Jill Graham that I liked a lot. So it was like a teen, young adult mystery, kind of Nancy Drew. And I remember I liked that a lot. We could get German translations at the time, and I read that, a little bit Nancy Drew also. That was kind of where it started a little bit.
So there were a few that had...
I could get a few.
Now, between series novels and standalones, which do you find more difficult to write?
It depends. It's always like the second, third in the series that is the make it or break it moment a little bit, to see if there's enough to go on. And I've had a few books that I wrote where I thought about making it a series, and then it did not happen. And it took me a while until I really came to that moment with Carpenter Harding also, that I said, okay, this is it, you know, and I'm going forward with this. But even that, I remember writing the second book, I was took me a while to think about it and really figure out, are those really the ones? And it turned out they were.
Now, the Joanna Mitchell thriller, that originally was written as a standalone, correct?
That is true. And like I said, I had interactions with readers, and I thought about it for a long time. And I really thought at the moment where they were in the story at the end of Killer Instinct, I could have left it off there. But also there was something that drew me back into that. And I also wanted to have closure and give closure to the readers and the characters on that family history. So all of that, I think now with the trilogy, it's really done.
So your readers are the ones that kind of said, we want more.
It was a little bit of both.
Both.
But yeah, I had questions about what comes next. And I wanted to answer those questions for the readers and for myself also.
So I think you just said we're done. We can't expect any more Joanna Mitchell's thrillers in the future?
in this storyline or in this universe. I think that was really, telling the rest of the story now.
Okay, so you think that's wrapped up?
Yeah.
Well, you've listened to the show before, have you, or?
Before, no. Sorry.
That's quite all right. Don't be sorry about that. Not everybody has. Everybody should, of course, but not everybody has.
I know.
Well, now we get to what I call awkward questions that authors get.
Okay.
And it can be anything that people ask us that sometimes they're rude, sometimes they're difficult to answer, sometimes they're just a little bit awkward, and sometimes they're not so bad, but just tough to answer. So what I do is I spin a wheel, and then we see what we come up with.
All right.
You ready? Okay.
Yes.
So hold on, and I'm going to spin the wheel. Okay, yours isn't so bad. Though it is kind of a hard one to answer very frequently. Who do you base your characters after?
You're right. That's not so easy to answer because it's a little bit a mix of everything. It might be something I saw somewhere, something I read somewhere. Sometimes a story or a storyline. I don't know. It's really a mix of different things. And as for the genre, that's where it comes together. Also, it's like I just always, like I said, I liked this female protagonist, and especially after discovering lesbian fiction, I think it's always interesting to put a certain kind of character into positions of power when we know that in reality it's not always that way, and it was hard to would be even harder to get into those positions of power. And so there's a certain satisfaction to do that in fiction, to have the ability to do that.
So would you say that you write characters more like you would like things to be?
Yes, often that's the case. I think so. So this is why I have a bit more romance in the stories, but I don't often write pure romance because that is the for me, like the mystery and thrillers, that is like the perfect mix of escapism, because they acknowledge that the world is often not great, but it's also, there is a bit of a happy ending, a bit of a good outcome, and that is like the escape part. We know it's not always that way in reality, but in fiction we can make it so.
Well, and that leads me to a question that I find interesting, is that you do guarantee your readers a happy ending.
Yes.
Why is that?
That is because I've been burned a few times from my favorite authors, from some of my favorite series, that main characters died in there. And I've often followed this discussion and often seen writers say, we have to do wherever the characters lead us, and we cannot really control it. And I was always of the opinion that we can totally control it. And it's a little bit this, being burned and having been burned and not wanting the same thing for my readers. So they go in, they know bad things are going to happen, and they know that it's not going to be easy and that happy ending will be hard earned, but there will be one.
Well, you and I briefly talked the other day about the pandemic. And as writers, you would think that it wouldn't impact us all that much. But you said that it does. How so?
It does in a way because, we cannot completely shut it out. And I think it's also when you think what kind of writing environment you need. And for me, it's like, of course, I work from home most of the time, but it's also, of course, I'm aware whatever else is going on in the world. And if it's, this is a situation that none of us really could have anticipated, or none of us have really been in. So we all have changed some day-to-day routines, or like something like groceries that we maybe never thought about it before so much. We have changed the routines, and of course that impacts us in a way.
Yeah, you know, I'm similar. I work from home, and my husband goes to work in an office where he's all by himself every day, so he continues to work. So even though our lives haven't changed that much, it's still different.
Of course, yes.
You can still feel it in the air.
My wife teaches English as second language, and normally she would also see students or have them come to her office. And now it's all online. So basically, we do the same things we did before, but still, I mean, we don't escape it completely in the fact that she doesn't go out to see students at this time. And of course, we are all aware. We watch the news, so it's not like we shut it out completely just because what we do is something fictional.
So you're stuck together every day.
No, that's that's one way to put it, but it has a lot of advantages too, because there's no more commute. Basically, we save on gas, and we have more time for meals and in between. So it's also an advantage. I mean, this is also the other side that. I feel we are pretty privileged to be able to do this, to do our jobs. And it's almost sort of a taboo to say when you're not doing so badly during this time, because it's such a challenge and so much suffering for a lot of people. So it's a tricky subject sometimes.
Yeah, well, you know, my husband and I work separate places during the day, but we are, I guess you could say, stuck together at night and on the weekends. But like you, I think that's a good thing. We get to spend more time together.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, your novels are current day, is that correct?
Yes, except for, one that's a little bit in the dystopian future, but usually I do contemporary.
Okay. Now, since they're contemporary, do you anticipate writing this unusual period into any of your future novels?
I'm still thinking about it because, of course, I've also followed discussions in various groups about this, and a lot of people say that you date your novels if you put it in there. On the other hand, always something, I believe, that could date the novels, the technology that people use sometimes, or what I might do is to write a little short 2,000 to 5,000 words in that area about Carpenter Harding, how they live, how they feel at this time, but not make it part of a novel. So it would be in between. It would be accessible to readers if they want it. If they don't want it, they can ignore it.
You know, I hear that sometimes that you'll date your novel, and I find that funny. I mean, Victorian novels are dated,
but we still
enjoy them. And I don't know if you're familiar with Sue Grafton.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you are. Her PI, Kinsey Millhone, everything takes place in the 80s before cell phones and computers and that sort of thing. So her stories are dated and people still enjoy them. So
great. So, I totally agree. So it's that's not necessarily an argument not to do it.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not one that buys into that. I understand people's concerns with that, but I don't buy into it that much.
Also, I think it's such a big global event that it's going to be hard to ignore it completely. I think it might also depend a little bit on which genre you're writing in, but if it's contemporary, it might be a good thing to at least acknowledge it in some way. It doesn't have to be the basically main character of the story, but just so you know, those people are still, those characters are still in the same reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mentioned last week's show that It won't be the work in progress I'm currently starting, but eventually I'm going to have to address this time period. And I don't know how I'm going to do that. It's going to be difficult. But
yes, absolutely, because everything, information changes so fast. So where do you place it, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's a challenge. I guess I should be happy that I got a challenge ahead of me.
A challenge is always good.
Exactly. Now, you're an independent author.
Yes.
Have you had any novels traditionally published?
I started out with a small publisher. That was in 2012. And my first six novels were published with that publisher. I found like I wasn't sure about the number, but it was like five under the direction when I started out, and they changed owner at some point, and number six still came out with that publisher. So I have a little bit of that perspective also.
A little bit of that background. Mm-hmm. What was behind your decision to publish independently?
I started out at first, I tried something out with another pen name and to do hybrid, and just to see if I could do it, just to see if how it would work also, because I was, of course, in different groups already with different authors who did one thing or the other, or and I really wanted to see how it would work, if it would work for me. And from there, it was like a natural progression. And then when I came up with Carpenter Harding, I did not submit it, but I went independent route with that. And that was for me the better direction in the end.
Well, I was going to ask, what's your experience been as an independent author? Did you have any rough roads in that, or why did you continue?
There are various things. I always read from a lot of authors that they said more control. And in the beginning, I thought it didn't matter so much to me, because when I was very new to everything, I appreciated a lot all the things that a publisher could do for me. But I also realized that that you also give up a lot of control, and just to have the numbers all the time at your fingertips, basically, that is interesting in so far, because you can react to them more quickly. Like with the publisher, I had, for example, royalties four times a year, and I, of course, didn't have the numbers in that detail that I have now to adjust marketing, to adjust, react faster also.
And you said you started writing when you moved to Canada. Are you writing full-time now?
I'm writing full-time now. I did write before. It was really that time when I started shopping around for a publisher, because at that time I wasn't really sure if there was any other way for me or if I could do it at all. And I found somebody to life journal at the time, which is kind of funny when you think of the way life journal went. So it was, just lucky.
How was that transition from working a traditional job to writing full time?
It was pretty great, also pretty scary, both of it on both ends, because it was a huge transition for me on literally all levels, because I moved from Germany to Canada, then also here to Quebec, where, of course, it's French, and so then leaving the job behind, and that was a big deal, but I don't regret it, because in the end, it worked out pretty well.
Well, I'm glad you have a happy ending there.
Thank you.
Of all the characters that you've written, this you might need to think about. Of all the characters you've written, who would you most like to spend the day with?
That is an interesting question. I think I would still go back to Jordan Carpenter from the Carpenter Harding series because I'm just at the moment looking for the right word to describe that because usually it's often the question, what is your favorite character? And it's not exactly the same thing to think about to spend a day with, but it's just really interesting because there's also a lot of family history and a lot of around that character aside from the solving the case. So I think that, and also I think we would have some things in common to talk about. So that would be interesting for me. And it's, I don't know if what the awareness of the character would be in that in meeting the characters. So would that character be aware that you are the writer or in that question? So yeah, I don't know if the characters would like to meet me. That is the other question because pretty heavy things happen to them. So
well,
I'm not sure.
That's what I was about to ask you. What would that character have to say about you?
I'm not so sure. But I mean, like we said before, I give them happy endings. So maybe they are grateful. I would hope so.
I guess they would, since you guarantee a happy ending. We all aren't guaranteed a happy ending, but you guarantee them that. So they should be grateful.
That's true. I agree.
Well, it has been a pleasure to talk to you and get to and meet you.
Thank you. You too.
And I appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Hit the subscribe button wherever you hear our show so you don't miss a single episode. Tell a friend too. Thank you for listening.